Hello, this is Jeff Steiner from Americans in France, and I am talking with Kristen Espinache. Kristen, are you there?
Yes, hello, Jeff. So nice to have you on the phone.
And where are you?
We are currently in the beautiful Bandol area. The Bandol area is between Marseille and Toulon.
And you have a blog.
Yes, it's called French Word a Day.
And what is French Word a Day?
French Word a Day, originally, like the name, it is a word a day that goes out via email, except that currently it's going out about two or three times a week. It's a chronicle of our life here in France via words. So, for example, you might have the word beurre, butter, and I might write a whole story about how I just scolded my husband this morning for buttering his toast when maybe he should be eating more fruit. But on the other hand, you know, baguettes and all that are so good. So, I'll talk about butter, and I'll talk about, on that subject of butter, I might talk about health, or I might talk about that butter itself. It just depends.
And what brought you to France?
I was going to Arizona State University. They organized an exchange program in Lille, in the north of France. I was just miserable. It was so cold up there, coming from Arizona, and that's what brought me here.
That's what brought you to the south of France.
Well, actually, when I was in Lille, one of the students said, "Hey, let's go take the train and go south to X." And I had never, you know, heard of X. So I took the train south with her, and we ditched the school in Lille. We actually finished the two months, and we signed up for kind of a general school in Aix-en-Provence, where I could still get credits. And we ended up ditching some of those classes too, going to the bistros and to the nightclubs. I actually met my husband in one of those nightclubs.
So you kind of dropped out of school.
Once I got to France via this Arizona State University program, you know, it was only a two-month program, and I thought, this is too short of a program, you know, 2.5 months. And I was here and had taken the trouble and expense to get here, and I thought, you know, you're here. Don't lose this chance. Dig in and don't go. So I managed to call my advisor and work out an independent study program.
Okay.
So although I said I ditched a few classes, I did manage to write a paper on the experiences we were having here in France.
You're a very, very good writer. In fact, you've written two books.
Books that I have written were originally blog posts on the blog, and they are all about... They're all short stories, different anecdotes about our life. I told you about the butter. But just different things that come at us as foreigners here in France. To be able to write about them helps to, you know, fit into this society and helps us to laugh about the experiences. Bossonian Provence is actually from the 2005-2006 archives at French Word a Day. It's all the anecdotes and life experiences that were happening then. So you have our children that are younger, and the stories are filled with French words. So the idea is to be able to read about French culture, and as you're reading, without even knowing it, you're picking up words because the French words are in the story in context.
Let's talk about a few of those words. The first word you ever did, I looked through your archives, is bosse.
Well, bosse, you know, I remember really wanting to share my stories on the web, you know, with this typical American, you know, nothing to it but to do it. I thought, well, I'll start this website, and on that positive thread, you know, what could be the most meaningful word that I could use for my very first word of the day, you know, and there have been thousands now. And I thought, gosh, bosse, which means to work. And so I wrote just a little, maybe one or two or three line post that day, you know, saying, this is my blog, welcome, and I promise if you will read that I will, je vais bosser, you know, I'm going to work, I'm going to give it my all. And so that was the first word, and I'm glad that I used it because it's been meaningful. A meaningful one for me.
I think that was a great word to start. And then I looked through your archives again, and a ficelle. Now, to me, a ficelle is a string, but apparently no.
Well, thank you, Jeff, because for me, that's the first thing that popped in my mind. You know, that story is about having dinner at my uncle's house in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Or actually, we were having breakfast, so we must have spent the night. And at the breakfast table, they had put out a selection of breads, which was really nice. And one of them was really thin, like a super thin baguette, the size of a finger, really long. And I had noticed it, and my uncle all of a sudden said to me, "Pass the string." And so I was confused, and I thought, string? But there are no strings on this table. And then I learned that ficelle name of one of these really skinny baguettes. You know, when people are speaking to you in French, it's almost hilarious, the images that go through your mind as they're speaking. I mean, the image that would have gone through my mind if I were French would have been an image of a really skinny baguette. But instead, the image was a string that I couldn't find anywhere at all on the table until my uncle pointed it out.
Before I read your post, I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was a bread called a ficelle. Whenever I go into a bakery now, I look for a ficelle and I don't really see them. I don't know. Are they only, will be something you'll only find in the South?
You know, it might be regional. In this case, this ficelle was bought in Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
What about n'importe-quoi? What does n'importe-quoi mean? Or what significance does that have in your life?
Yeah, n'importe-quoi, I hear that all the time. You know, it can mean anything at all. It can mean whatever. At the time I learned it, I guess I didn't know exactly what it meant, because the story there was of my husband, my future husband, sending me back to the state. He actually bought me a one-way ticket. We were living together as a boyfriend and girlfriend for about 10 months when I couldn't seem to adapt to life in Marseille. This was in 1992, and I had a hard time adapting. I didn't realize that was going to happen to me, you know, a big Francophile. After a series of clashes, cultural clashes, one day he surprised me with a one-way ticket back.
Oh my God.
I mean, a one-way ticket. And so I wrote the story of what happened to me when I actually got back to Arizona and was looking for work, was looking for what was I going to do now. And the story is about, you know, kind of fantasizing about what would a dream job be for me. And a dream job for me would be, you know, to work independently, to have my own business. So I dreamed up this job called Girl Friday. I would call it n'importe quoi. I thought that meant anything at all. I could offer anything at all. I could offer to wash your dog. I could offer to type up your paper. I could offer to clean out your closet, or, you know, to just simply listen to you talk. And so I thought, yeah, now I should give this a French name, this company. It occurred to me to use the word n'importe quoi. But I found out later that wouldn't really be a good idea, because n'importe quoi kind of means baloney. It can mean anything from baloney to oh, give me a break, or you're speaking
nonsense.
Yes, thank you, Jeff. That's it, nonsense. So thankfully, I never had to start up a company and name it nonsense, and I eventually made it back to France.
A writer? Have you always written?
Always been fascinated by writers, and been attracted to the romantic side of the writer's life, probably from the time I was 13 or 14 when I started my own diary. You know, I really believe when you plant those things in your mind, you sort of become what you think. And I ended up, you know, doing what I've always dreamed of doing. I didn't have any particular skill. I was always too afraid of taking a writing class, which I felt were for writers and not for dreamers like me. Later on, when I was a stay-at-home mom, it was time for me to go to work and to find an income. And I was very intimidated to see that all the people around me, all the French moms, you know, all of our friends had professional jobs, and I had no idea where to begin. But I did remember my original dream, and I thought, you know, why don't you try? Just try to write some stories. And that's how I began.
Well, that's wonderful. Blossoming in Provence, and that is actually self-published, right?
I self-published that one year ago this month.
And what's it like self-publishing? Because your first book was Words in a French Life, right?
Yes.
And that you self-published, but then you found a quote-unquote publisher?
Yes. The first book, Words in a French Life, happened around 2003. It's an inspiring story, I think, because there were two more weeks before the end of the year, and I thought, gosh, it's 2003, you know, what goals have I accomplished this year? And I happened to be flipping through Writer's Digest, and I found a company called Instant Publisher. And I thought, my gosh, they said that they can publish a book instantly. So I quickly got together all the stories on my blog, which was about a year old at the time, and I quickly did a cover, sent it to them, and within 2 weeks, I got these stories published in book form. So that's how it all sort of started. It was self-publishing. I was so bitten by the bug of publishing that I just continued. Every 3 or 4 or 5 months, I would collect my stories together. On volume 4, within 16 months, and I received an email from an editor at Simon & Schuster. So it was completely unsolicited. I was just doing my own thing, minding my own business, just doing the work and having a lot of fun when I received this email from Simon & Schuster. Just, I want to follow it up. It was actually a reader of mine connected me, somebody who actually is Anne Ma, who is a writer. She's on her second novel now about France, gastronomy. She, at the time, was a reader, and she liked these little stories, these little vignettes, and she contacted a friend of hers at Simon & Schuster. And I never even got to meet Anne until probably a year or so after. It's your readers, you know, starting a blog, you've developed a readership, and a lot of them are very silent, but very caring.
Let's get into some nitty gritty here. What would be some suggestions you would have for somebody wanting to move to France?
Just do it, because a lot of people are sitting there thinking, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I, and they're sitting on a wall. Pack your bag. Secondly, you know, nowadays, with Facebook and with all this, these connections that we have, and with internet, which we didn't have when we came here, no internet, none of that stuff, which felt very isolating. But now with all these connections, you can actually start to connect with people before you even pack your bag. I mean, I have a lot of people that contact me. You know, I can't answer these questions, by the way, because there's a lot of people that call in or actually email in. Getting contacts already in France, you know, line up as many contacts as you possibly can, because when you get over here, you just never know which ones will pan out. It's so possible now with Facebook and all these things. It's easy to get to know people over here.
Talking about language, when you came, how much French did you speak?
Funny question, because I thought, you know, based on my grades, which miraculously had turned around from F's to A's because I found something that I loved, which was French. After turning that around, I thought, you know, based on these new grades I was getting of A's and B's in French, I really thought that I could speak perfect French. And, you know, as a college student, I'll never forget walking up and down the streets of X, hearing Americans thinking, my gosh, can't they get rid of those accents? Can't they make an effort? And now here I am 20 years later, my accent is worse than any of those that I had ever heard. I have a very strong American accent. I thought my French was just the best. I really did. And I just couldn't figure out why these other Americans couldn't get it together and, you know, speak without that accent. And it wasn't until years later that a close friend of ours said to me, wow, you know, your French has really improved. She said, I couldn't understand a word you said when you got here. And so for me, it was a real, humiliating moment or a humble pie moment where I realized that, you know, I didn't speak as good a French as I thought I did. And in fact, my accent was pretty strong.
We can actually hear your husband's English, right, and French on the website.
Every time I put out a newsletter, he will record the example sentence, so you can hear his beautiful French accent.
And the photos. Do you take the photos?
Yes, I take all the photos. It's so beautiful here. It's really not that hard to take a photo of. If you love the architecture like I do, or if you love the countryside, there's so much inspiration just walking out your door. It's good to just always have your camera on you. And I think the photos are important because it was actually John Mark, my husband, who inspired me that every time I did a post, he said, put a photo in. And I think that the website appeals to different people. Some people just want to hear the sound file. Some people just want to learn the word of the day and see an example sentence. Some people just want to read the story. They follow the chronicle of our life for 10 years now. And then some people are more visual and they just enjoy coming and seeing a few snapshots.
Is there anything you don't like about France?
A couple things I don't like. Without making a blanket statement, sometimes the French tend to be reserved. You know, I'll give a quick example. I knew a woman for about 9 years who I really liked and admired and really wanted to be a close friend. And I remember just every time I saw her, how much I just enjoyed being around her. But she never really showed a lot of emotion. And I just thought by the time I had to move on, because we actually moved towns, and I thought, well, in all these years, I guess we just never really got to know each other. Or I guess we never became the kind of friends that I thought we would. And so I was packing up my house the very last day, scrubbing it down, packing it up, and I got this knock on my door, and it was this friend who I so admired. And she was just shaking and just crying, and tears, tears, tears. It was just so moving. And I thought, my gosh, you know, 9 years, I had no idea that she felt this way. It's just an example of how reserved some of the French can be, I think. On the other hand, Americans are sometimes seen as being, you know, a little too friendly too quickly.
Right.
So I can now see both. I mean, I can now see both. And I think I tend to be much more reserved than I was when I first moved here. And I'm not sure it's a good thing, but I do notice it.
Is there anything you missed from the U.S.?
I missed much more in the beginning than I do now. I've kind of been able to move on. All those things that I initially miss, like peanut butter, I really miss. I miss a certain kind of Carmex chapstick I used to wear. I miss that. But since you learn to just let go and find equivalents here.
Well, you can find peanut butter, too. We find.
You can find peanut butter, or you can make it yourself.
This has been a good talk, Kristen. Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Thank you, Jeff. It's so nice to talk to you after all these years of emailing.